I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast. And as mentioned, John, we have made it over the hump. We're over 300 episodes. It's all downhill from here.
Let's be honest, it was downhill a long time ago. But anyway, that is Patrick Hester. He is an author and a blogger and a podcaster. You can check out his website, atfmb.com, and follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I am a musician and a teacher and a podcaster, and you can check me out at John Anilio. And today, we are joined by Merle Lafferty. She's a Campbell Award-winning author. She is a podcasting Hall of Famer. She's the creator of Sansaball, and she has a new book out from Orbit called 6 Weeks that is coming out. Well, probably by the time you hear this, it'll be out already. Merle, thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks, guys. It's great to talk to you again. It's been too long.
Yes. As longtime listeners of the show know, both Patrick and I go way back with Murr. And really, I think in some small way, Murr is somewhat responsible for the Functional Nerds podcast. I feel like you doing your podcast and then Patrick did, you know. So thank you for supporting us early on, Murr. And we've been delighted to see your career, you know, just keep progressing and moving on and all that good stuff. So thank you, Murr.
Well, sure. I've been excited watching you guys create what you've created. It's an awesome show.
Thanks. Now, you are joining us today on location at a con. What con are you at, and what can you tell us about that con?
I am at Illogicon 6, which is a small mid-North Carolina con in the Raleigh-Durham area. It's a nice, small local con. We have fun. I don't know what else to say. There's a lot of local authors here. We have Daniel Jose Older as our guest of honor. He's our big name. There are a lot of cool costumes. My daughter's walking around as a character from Gravity Falls.
Nice. Yeah.
And that's what's going on. I've got my reading at 2:00.
So when did your daughter start going to cons with you? Because I know you didn't always take her.
Gosh, I'm not sure when. It's like sometimes when it was local, she would go with me and hang out with my husband, but she always liked looking at the costumes and everything. And then she started making her own costumes and wanting to go to more. If we travel abroad to a convention, like we went to Worldcon in Melbourne in 2010, she went with us there and she was kind of into it and at times and kind of bored at times, but now she's old enough to be on her own and wander around. I think it was a con on the Cob in Ohio when she turned 9. It was like right around her birthday, and it felt like she immediately leveled up. With the day she was 8, she had to be with us all the time. The day she was 9, she like glommed on to a group of like 11 and 12 year olds, and they just ran around the con together all day. And it was almost like she like turned bright gold and went ding and then suddenly level up and she's been around the con. So I guess comfortably for about 5 years. You know, we always have school to worry about, and if there's travel involved, the extra cost. But I love having her here. It's a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
Now, not to get too personal, but I feel like I read it in a blog post or something when I was prepping for the show, but your daughter is now a teenager.
She is. She's 14 and in high school.
And John, I can attest to the fact that she's at that age where when her mom says, oh, and you know this person, you know, blah, 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 you get that look in the rolly eyes.
Yep. She got the look.
Well, that's how you know you're officially a teenager. But no, it just made me think like how long we've all been doing this, because, you know, I feel like she was a little girl when I first met, which makes sense because she was.
Now she's a teenager.
That's why when people say, how long have you been podcasting? I'm like, oh, like 60 years. I don't know. It feels like forever.
Yeah.
It is funny when you do these things, because in the context of our adult lives, it doesn't seem very long. But when you have kids and you see their lives, my son is 10 now. You know, I think we started doing this podcast when he was like 3.
Yeah.
So that's a big difference in a child's life. You know, that's 2/3 of their life there. So it's that's how that works. So, you know, we can talk all day with Mark before we let's try to, you know, put some sort of structure upon the show. We're going to get into our picks of the week in a moment. I hope Mur has one picked out. If not, I will stall a bit while she thinks of one. But before we get into that, I want to take a moment to thank our patrons, the people that support us over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. You know, people can support us at any level, and the people that are already doing that, thank you so much. It really means the world to us. We couldn't do the show without you at this point. If you enjoy the show and you enjoy interviews with people like Mur, consider becoming one of our backers over there at Patreon. You could do $1 a month. You could do a couple bucks a month, whatever works for you. We appreciate it. If you can't do that, you can write us up a review and give us some stars over on iTunes. That helps too. And you could tell a friend, hey, you like that science fiction-y stuff, don't you? All right. Well, these two dorks talk about it all the time and have authors on. They're okay, but the authors are good. So there you go. Consider
if
that.
I make a Podcast Alley joke, will anybody except for Patrick laugh? And will Patrick laugh?
Possibly.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm just remembering the old days when you're asking people to go to Podcast Alley and vote for you. And way, way long time ago, before iTunes.
At Worldcon in Kansas City, where I think it was Libsyn was there?
Yes, Libsyn was there because Rob Walsh lives in Kansas City.
And they had a table, and I was walking around with the Beyond the Trope folks, who I listened to your episode with them, and I do apologize that they put you on the spot and said, so what impact have you had on Patrick Hester's life?
That's not my place to say. It's our place to say.
But I was walking around with them, and we walked up to that table, and I'm like, oh, podcasts. I like podcasts. And he's like, oh, really? And he's like, has all these cards and different things out there. And I said, yeah. I said, one of my favorites is the Functional Nerds. Do you have that on your network? And he's like, no. And he grabs his laptop and he starts pulling up on the website and he's like, well, no, I don't have, it looks like they have a lot of episodes. Wow. They use WordPress. You should never use WordPress. And I said, well, you know, they have a lot of episodes and I really like what they do. He's like, yeah, I should reach out to them or something. Huh? And then we just kind of walked away. And Emily from Beyond the Trope looked at me. She says, you're mean.
Yep. You are.
Yeah. That is getting very podcaster inside baseball, but we missed the whole Libsyn thing because we use this is very technical, so I apologize to people who don't give a crap about this stuff, but we use box.net, which I think they're actually just box.com now. I think they got the .com at some point. We use that to host our audio files because that's what I used for my music a million years ago to upload it. And I already had an account there and we just did the podcast that way too. This is like, you know, pre-Bandcamp and pre-streaming and all that. So that was the only way you can get your music out into the world was something like that. And I already had an account, so that's what we do. And it works, so we just stuck with it. But I know a lot of podcasters use the Libsyn. We never did, though. But anyway, let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
Mur, do you have a pick?
Yeah, I've recently started watching The 3%, and The 3%, I think it's crap. I'm sorry, we have lots of streaming services now, so sometimes I can't remember where I see it.
That's Netflix, 3%.
That's Netflix, thank you.
Yeah.
It's actually a Brazilian show, and it's in Portuguese, so you can't be one of those people that sits in front of the TV with their iPad and plays a game while you watch TV, because you actually have to pay attention, unless you speak Portuguese, which I do not. But it is a really interesting, futuristic-type show about the best and the brightest getting the resources that the rest of the world is without. And so you've got these not quite teens, I'd say, you know, early 20s type people all going through a variety of mind games to be part of the 3%. And we're not too far into it, but it's really interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, you know, Patrick, this is what I was talking about. This is, you know, Netflix has so many new shows coming out. Like, that's another one. Because last week's episode, where I picked Travelers, which is another new Netflix original. It's a a time travel show starring Eric McCormick, Will from Will and Grace, and it's very good. It's like the Stargate alumni and all that kind of stuff in there involved.
It's interesting, John, because just last night I went through my Netflix and I was adding things to my list, like the OA, the new One Day at a Time reboot. Mm-hmm.
Yep, I heard that's good.
My husband does not endorse the OA.
Oh, really?
OA is kind of polarizing. I know a lot of people that like it, but a lot of people that kind of disappointed in it as well. So I guess your husband is on the disappointed side of the OA?
Yes, he is on the disappointed side. He was watching it, and his reviews of it basically told me that I didn't want to watch it. So I'm
not. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm still going to try it, check it out. The other one is the movie that they did, Spectral.
Right. I heard mixed reviews about that, too, because that was supposed to be a big release that I think the studios were like, I don't think this is good enough to get, you know, it looks cool though. Mm-hmm. It looks like, you know, military Ghostbusters, you know, so.
There's another one. Oh God, you said Travelers and.
Well, The Magicians is up there now, which I definitely want to get into that because I love the Lev Grossman books that it's based on. So, it's nice to be in this position where there's lots of stuff out there. So there you go. Okay. So Murr is picking 3%, which is another sci-fi show on Netflix, Portuguese one. So go watch it and read subtitles and don't look at your iPad while you watch it.
That's right. Pay attention.
Yes. I pay attention when I watch. Like I watch one episode of something a night. I sit down, I watch it, I turn it off.
I envy your focus. I need some of that.
All right, Patrick, what is your pick this week?
I have finally taken the plunge into the Codex Alera.
That is Jim Butcher. Butcher, the fantasy.
That's his fantasy that was based on a challenge that he couldn't take a really bad idea and write a good book about it. And he told the person, I can do that with two really bad ideas. What have you got? And the person said, okay, a lost Roman legion and Pokemon. And he wrote like five or six books in this series. And it's interesting. It's different. It does have some quirks and some odd points to it. But overall, I'm enjoying it. And I am doing the audiobook on it. So it's being read by Kate Reading. And I do like her voice. I will say that there are some artifacts in this because essentially they took the Penguin CDs for this. And they just sort of ripped them and put them up there. And each CD includes, at the end of the CD, this horn trumpet to let you know that the CD is over and to switch CDs. And they left that in.
I think that's actually a little bit better than it is time to switch CDs.
Yes.
Which I've found in various audio books.
But the first couple times it happened, I thought it was something that they were doing to let me know that like something cool is about to happen. Like I thought it was because this kid, he's the only kid that doesn't have any powers. Like everybody else has essentially Pokemon and he doesn't. He's just normal. And it bugs the crap out of him. And so the first time it happened, it was in the middle of one of his scenes. And I thought, oh, they're letting me know that he's doing something. He doesn't know he's doing. No, it's just to switch the CD. And it just bugged the crap out of me.
Patrick, just back to I'm listening to audiobooks. You know, I listen to a lot these days. And as I think I mentioned on a recent episode, I listen at 2x speed and still working for me. I know I'm going to come upon a voice actor who reads too fast and 2x is going to be too fast and I'm going to have to slow it down. But so far, so good.
You listen at 2x?
I can't do that.
I do, yes.
I tried to listen at like 1:25 and I could do it, but I really, I can't even imagine bumping it up to 2.
It, for whatever reason, it works for me. It's just, you know, it's a little jarring at first, but if you give it like 5 minutes, then you get into it. It works for me. And like I said, I'm assuming it's not going to work with everybody. But that the point I was making is that if you listen to any of the Star Wars audiobooks, they have, you know, sound effects and music, and that's... That stuff is really funny at 2x speed here. and hear like laser blasts going at 2x speed. That's a little jarring, but the narration is fine for me in that way. My pick this week is a Brandon Sanderson book that we were talking about that last episode, and that is Warbreaker, which is a book that he put out in 2010. I actually have a paperback of this that we got at the World Fantasy that we went to a million years ago.
Oh, I had that too, yeah.
Yeah, so that's been sitting on my shelf for a million years.
I couldn't put it on the shelf because it kept bowing the wood.
It is one of those big bugs. But it's... what happened was, as Patrick has talked about with Audible, I'm a recent Audible person. This was on sale, and it might just always be on sale, but it was like on sale for like $5. And this is a lot, as many Brandon Sanderson books. This 30, is like a 20. 30,
I thought it was 32 hours.
It's up there. It might be like 28, 29. I don't know. It's a lot. So $6 for 28 hours, pretty good deal. And I'm a big Brandon Sanderson fan. So I'm like, you know what? I'm never going to read that book. It's been sitting there a million years. Let me get the audio. And I did. And it's great. It's part of his Cosmere universe. So it's, you know, most of his fantasy novels fit into that, the Mistborn books and the Stormlight Archives. So this is, you know, a different planet and not directly related, but is eventually will fit into his Cosmere. And if you like the other Brandon Sanderson books, you'll like this, you know, good magic system, well thought out, just a very well structured story. I really dug it. So especially if you're an audiobook listener and you have Audible, go check it out, because it's, you know, if you're one of those people like me that only does one credit a month, this is a nice way to get a second book for, you know, fairly, you know, for a good price. So,
Mer, have you ever considered writing an epic fantasy along those lines? You know, like a really huge book.
Oh no,
I feel like yours are quicker.
I don't write long. Yeah. I actually have a problem writing long, and I wish I could, because I think delving deep into those kinds of adventures are a lot of fun, but it's just not been my preferred thing to write. I have something I've been kind of toying with for a couple of years. I haven't been able to sell it on proposal yet, and I am considering maybe just writing the thing and deciding what, you know, see if my agent can sell it on that. But still, I don't even know if that's a big epic scale. 6 weeks is longer than my other books, but only like by 20,000 words or so. So it's still a like up there, like 100, 105 kind of thing.
Hmm. Now, speaking of epic fantasy, I believe it's called Stone Coast, where you did some advanced learning. I don't know if it was it a master's degree.
I got a master's degree.
Right. So you got your master's degree at that program, and one of your instructors was David Anthony Durham. Am I getting his name correct?
Yes.
So he's a big epic fantasy author, guys.
He's got a really interesting trilogy out. Highly recommended.
Well, John, you know that you have the different kinds of like Clarion, which is all intensive, go in, you're there for however long it is. I think it was 6 weeks or something. I don't remember.
6 weeks, yes.
And then you're just, it's intense. And then what Murr did is broken out a little bit. So I think that for certain people, it keeps you from burning out. Would you agree with that, Murr?
That's actually one of the reasons why I chose to do it. I'd heard so many amazing things about Clarion, but I'd also heard things like, people can't write 6 months after going through it because it's so intense. And, you know, that might be an exaggeration or something, but,
I've heard a whole year. I've heard like people have gone a whole year and couldn't write.
Yeah. Just because their brain gets so full, and it really does put you through a lot of emotional things. I mean, being away from your family for that long and your job, and then going through all that intensive stuff. I mean, it's changed lives. There've been people who, you know, you name half the hot writers today, many of them have been to Clarion or Odyssey, but I decided it just wasn't for me. I would rather do 10 days twice a year, five times, instead of six straight weeks.
And now where is Stone Coast located?
Southern Maine. It's the University of Southern Maine. So, yeah.
That's not a bad place to be, Southern Maine.
And how did it change how you're doing your stuff now?
It's hard to say. I would like to say that I got something from it, but I can't tell you what. I would say it was a lot more organic than, you know, just the fact that I got to work with David Anthony Durham and James Patrick Kelly and Nancy Holder and Liz Hand. And I hadn't done a workshop with my peers in a long time, and that was really useful.
Cool. Now, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about your new book, which is coming out very soon. Again, by the time this airs, I think it will be out already. And that is 6 Wakes, which has a really interesting premise. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit of something about 6 Wakes?
Okay. 6 Wakes is a story of 6 clones who are driving a generational starship, and their jobs are to keep the starship running, make sure everybody asleep and in the database stay just fine. And when they die, there's a new clone waiting for them to wake up. And so the assumption is someone will die in an accident here. One will actually live to the end of their life there. And then they'll wake up a new clone and keep going. However, at the first chapter, all of our clones wake up at the same time, and their own dead bodies are floating around them because the grav drive has been turned off. They've all been murdered. Someone managed to wake them up before they died, and they have no idea which one among them is the murderer. So they have to figure out where they are, why they are where they are, and get the ship put back together and find out which among them killed each other. So it's, a friend of mine called it Lost in Space. Not like the old TV show Lost in Space, but the old TV show Lost taking place in space. Because I use a lot of flashbacks. So you're introduced to a character, you think you know who they are, and then you get one of their many, many previous lives on Earth and see where, what that tells you about their personalities and what they've been through. And so, it was a lot of fun to write. It's pretty much a locked room mystery. And I got to do a lot of Agatha Christie reading to prepare for it. So that was fun.
Oh, how horrible for you.
I know, it's terrible. Awful.
You know, I hear about this thing. I have a coworker that goes and does this like every work and that every weekend, like that escape the room stuff. Are you familiar with that stuff, Mer? Like,
yeah, I've done it once. We didn't escape.
And you did not escape. You perished.
We didn't make it. It was a thing at a gaming convention, and so we didn't know the people in the room, so at first you have to, if you don't already have an established relationship with people, you kind of have to figure out, okay, who's going to be the loud one? Who's going to be the one who knows what they're doing and is a leader? And who's going to be the one who doesn't know what they're doing and thinks they should be a leader? And there's a lot of red herrings in the room. So many red herrings. So you think I went on a wild goose chase looking for a code and was completely wrong. But they're really interesting the way they're developed.
Yeah, I always enjoy stuff like that. I did stuff like that in college, like these sort of road rally scavenger hunt kind of things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's they're always like a lot more fun than you think. They're always more taxing than you think they're going to be.
Yeah.
Too. You're just like, oh man, I'm tired now. That took the whole day. Yeah. It's hard to do those things when you have kids and stuff, you know, to be like, I'm just going to go and do something for the whole day that is not going to make any money or do anything, but I'm going to just go.
Well, the room, the escape the room thing we have in our area is only about an hour or an hour and a half.
Okay.
And I haven't checked on them lately, but I think they were working on a kid's room.
Cool.
So some places may have puzzles built for a much younger audience to get out of. So, I don't know. I've been thinking about taking my kid there. It might be fun.
Cool. You know, getting back to 6 Wakes, you know, when I was reading the information about it prior to our interview today, I was thinking like, this sounds like, you know, the pitch for a new show that's going to be on the Sci-Fi Channel or Netflix coming out in the spring. So, Mer, let me ask you this. I don't know if this is anything that you could speak to, because I don't know how often this kind of stuff happens. But, you know, let's say the book does well, which I'm sure it would, and certainly I'm sure it deserves to. You know, have you ever had any dealings with having any of your material, any interest in it getting produced for an optioned or anything like that? Or can you not talk about
that? No, it's public. I can talk about it. Actually, Shambling Guides are optioned by Netflix.
Oh, that's right. I knew that. That was a couple months ago that went.
It's really funny because they announced last April.
Right.
Everyone's saying, wow, Netflix is really grabbing up a whole bunch of stuff. And I'm like, no, the deal was done 2 years ago and I had to sit on it for that long.
Okay.
And I felt like I was doing the whole, my diamond shoes are too tight whining. But really, it's like, it was really frustrating knowing that I had this opportunity and I couldn't talk about it. They wouldn't let me talk about it forever. And then they announced it and I didn't even know they were announcing it. So like one day Twitter just blows up with congratulations, Burr. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then I realized they linked to this Hollywood Report that they'd purchased the rights. So,
Do you have any news to report in terms of any progress being made in that direction?
No, the thing they put out in public was the last I heard. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that the fact that they announced it means that they're closer to actually producing it, but I haven't heard anything.
Okay.
They don't tell me anything. I would love for Six Wakes to be picked up, obviously.
Right.
Well, and there's a resurgence of space opera and space-based science fiction now, thanks to The Expanse.
Yeah. What's really funny is my book was already already sold and I was about halfway done when I heard about the TV show Dark Matter, which the very beginning is almost exactly like mine, which is basically six people wake up and they don't know who they are or where they are. And they have to deal with the amnesia. Well, my people they haven't had a recent download of their memories. So there's that kind of amnesia, but they all know who they are and they know who each other is. But it's like when Dark Matter came out, I got scared. I'm like, oh crap, people are going to say my book is a complete ripoff. But I think there's plenty different and that the show has gone in a much different direction than my book does. So,
You know, when I was reading it, because I've watched Dark Matter and I did think that, and I wouldn't say that to you because I don't want to be that dick, you know? If you're a creative person, like, you know, like I've written a lot of songs in my day and like the worst thing is like, you know what that song sounds like? It kind of sounds like that. I'm like, yeah, jerk. Cause there's the major scale and every song is based on that. And you know what? Sometimes it's going to sound like that. All right.
Yeah.
I actually was at a thing, John, and there was a ton of writers there and I'm talking to a writer and this writer's telling me about their story and I had just read it. Like someone else had published. I had just read I mean, it was almost word for word. And I'm just sitting there and I'm going, oh, crap. Do I tell them or do I not tell them that I just read that?
Read their story or read someone else's story?
Someone else's story that was, I mean, it was.
Yeah, you don't.
It was verbatim. Yeah, and I'm just sitting there going, ugh.
Well, that's the point, Patrick, is that, you know, there's, you know, our last guest had brought up, Mike Resnick, and I remember one time he told us, he's like, well, yeah, of course you should kind of know where, you know, a story is kind of going. You know, it's how you tell it that should be, you know, there's only so many places a story can go. And certainly within a genre, you know, we have ideas, you know, generational ships and clones and what that are used a lot. And sometimes stories are going to be similar, but it's how you tell it that is really, you know, how much you're going to enjoy it and the skill of the author. So yeah, of course there's going to be times where there's going to be similarities between stories. So I don't know. I think that's just part of it.
Well, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Twilight, and Robin McKinley's Sunshine all have the same basic premise.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not even basic premise. It's a girl who has interesting abilities, falls in love with a vampire, and becomes a very, very important, special, chosen one kind of thing. And all three of them have that plot, and they all did just fine. Sunshine, unfortunately, I don't think did as well as the other two, but Sunshine's a really good book anyway.
Who wrote Sunshine now? See, that one I'm not even that familiar
Robin
with.
McKinley.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Well, so that's very exciting about that, because I forgot about that. I do remember that story coming up, and I don't know. I might have been one of the people that tweeted it to you.
Oh, I know.
Well.
I was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank
so,
you guys.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, we have been talking about it a lot lately, too, about how Netflix is just making a lot of shows these days. So hopefully yours will be one of the ones that come out with the rest of the lot of shows.
And John, I've noticed that there's a lot of positive buzz about Six Wakes as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are people tweeting and Facebooking it, and I've seen Murr like retweet and re-Facebook some stuff. So it seems like I'm hoping this is going to be a pretty big launch for you.
I really hope so. I don't know what to expect anymore. This book has been a very different experience for me on all sorts of fronts. So it's, I'm just going in trying to be as promotion heavy as I can be without pissing off people. But, yeah, I'm excited. It got a star from Publishers Weekly. It got a star from Library Journal.
Nice.
It got a star from Library Journal. The funny thing was, is that, well, I don't know if I should say that on recording. sorry, listeners, but I'll tell you afterwards, Patrick. It's a funny story that you will be amused at. But, yeah, the buzz has been really good. And I sold some foreign rights.
Wow.
I think they were Hungarian, and I didn't even hear about the fact that they were interested. Like, the foreign rights agent was just so fast and efficient. Like, I got the money, and I'm like, where did this money come from? And I contacted my agent, and she's like, I'm not entirely sure. Let me see. Because she didn't know either. It was really funny. But, yeah, so we got Hungarian rights. So
awesome.
Haven't even sold the UK rights yet, but we got the Hungarian rights locked up.
Nice. And what's going on in podcasting with you these days?
I'm still doing I Should Be Writing, and it says new, but it's like been 2 years now since I started a writing show with my friend Matt Wallace called Ditch Diggers, where we cover writing from the other end and talk about the business of writing. And a lot of the messages are different from what I talk about in I Should Be Writing, which is, for example, where, you know, you're allowed to suck because you're learning how to write. And don't worry about how good it is. Well, professionals don't have that luxury. So we have to talk about more business. What happens when your publisher closes its doors? What happens when your agent quits? Or what happens when a publisher won't pay you? And so we talk about some more hard-hitting stuff. And we say it's for, you know, established professionals, but listeners still, beginning listeners, sorry, I Should Be Writing listeners also listen to Ditch Diggers and then sometimes get despondent when they hear about what actually can happen once you get quote unquote successful. But yeah, so Ditch Diggers is the one that is a lot of fun because it still feels new to me. Again, in the whole podcasting lifespan, we have, you know, 2 years is still new for me. But it's a lot of fun to just talk about the business of writing and have a co-host, which I did not have in most of my other previous podcasts.
It helps a lot, doesn't it?
It does. It really does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we couldn't do it. Patrick and I need each other. Now, where does the name Ditch Diggers come from anyway? Is there a story behind that?
I would always say that I have when professional writers do not have the luxury of writer's block. We have,
you have to write.
You have to write. You don't get to go to work and go, oh, I'm not inspired today. You have to, it's like ditch diggers don't get ditch digger block. That's what I say. You got to approach writing like it's a blue collar job. Like you got to dig the ditch. Mm-hmm. And I know that creativity is harder mentally than, you know, blue collar work or even like, you know, surgery or whatever. It does come from a different part in your brain and you can get blocked and it can suck, but a lot of the blocks that newbies say they has to do with self-confidence, and a professional can't afford that, that luxury of having no self-confidence, because having no self-confidence means you don't eat. So yep. That's where Ditch Diggers comes from. We want people to approach their writing like it's a day job, and you've got to go and you got to write the words.
You know, John, there's been tons of really just incredible advice from her over the years on I Should Be Writing. And just last week, I had lunch with a gentleman here locally. His name is Pat Smythe. And the first time he and I ever met, we met at Peak to Peak Tap Room, because I was just going over there to listen to a friend of mine whose band was playing. And the next day, Pat sold a short story. And so he considers me his good luck charm.
Awesome.
So he wanted to have lunch because he's got a story out at an editor right now. And we were talking, and he's like, I don't know, I'm having trouble, you know, finding time to write and balancing that with my wife, because, you know, she just doesn't get it. And I said, oh, well, you know, and it was just reflex. I said, Murr actually covered that on I Should Be Writing years ago. You just need to sit down and have a conversation with her and say, look, you know, let's make an agreement. You know, I need time to write. I need an hour. And so if you'll give me that hour, then we'll do something together for an hour. And we'll spend that time together, you know, and we just balance it. I said, she talked about that years ago, especially with like holidays and stuff, because writers don't really get holidays off. You still have to write something. You still have to get those words on the paper, because you're usually working towards some sort of project that you're trying to finish. So, you know, when you're spending all that time with family, it's easy to get distracted and not spend the time and get your writing done. So again, you just sit down with your family and say, look, I just need an hour. And then I'm all yours, and we'll spend tons of time together, but please just let me have this hour by myself quietly. And that came from I Should Be Writing, and that came from Murr, and that was probably 7-8 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's still relevant.
I do repeat the things every once in a while.
Yeah.
Because people don't always go back 7 years to listen.
Not usually. You know, I do want to mention with your co-host, Matt Wallace, who has been a guest on our show before. I recently read the first two books. I don't know if they're called novellas or...
They're novellas. Sure.
Novellas, which were... let's see, Lust Locked was one, and the first one was Envy of Angels. So I read Envy of Angels and Lust Locked, and I really enjoyed them. And I've known Matt for a long time, so it was great to actually read his fiction for the first time, because if you know Matt, it's like, yeah, Matt wrote this. That seems good. So I would like, because I don't know if I've picked them as a pick of the week. I don't think I have, but I do recommend them. They're really good. It's basically urban fantasy in the world of professional chefs. So if you like all those like professional cooking shows and stuff, and
John, I'm sorry, like, you have been chopped.
Yes. So if you like that stuff and you like urban fantasy and you like a sense of humor and, you know, some pretty out there writing, I really recommend that series. I'm just starting the Pride Spell, I believe, is the third novella in that series.
Actually, his new one is coming out early February.
Yes, I think I saw that too. So I'm excited about that too. So I figured I'd mention that as well. Okay. So, Murr, yes. We are going to be wrapping it up. So once again, I'm going to mention that you can follow Murr on Twitter at Mighty Murr.
Yes.
You can go to her website, which is murrverse.com. You should go buy her book, which is 6 Wakes, which should be out right now as we speak. And go buy her other books too. Go buy The Shambling Guide, because, you know, when that comes on Netflix, you can be one of those hipsters like me that can be like, I read this book like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, all you lame asses that are just watching the Netflix show. Like, I read the books like a long time ago. So be a jerk like me and go and read those. So go read that too. And go check out our podcast, I Should Be Writing. Although I imagine a lot of people that already listen to our show probably listen to your show already too. They have a horrible theme song, but go and live with it. And Murr, anything else you want to mention before we do wrap it up?
Actually, yeah. I have another book coming out on the 31st, which is called Book Burners. It is a collaborative effort I did with a new publishing company called Serial Box, where me and three other writers wrote, we tried to call it HBO for ebooks. So mm-hmm. we each wrote like a 11,000-12,000 word novelette, and we wrote it in episodic format and released it episodically. But Saga bought the print rights. So if you didn't get it when it was available in audio and ebook, it'll be available in print. And because it's different publishers and they don't care to about, you know, my marketing needs, they're putting them out on the same day. So actually I have two books coming out at the end of January.
What a horrible problem. What a horrible problem.
I know, it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. But yeah, that one's more of an urban fantasy horror of an ensemble cast looking for magic books and trying to shut them down before they release demons and make everyone die.
That's funny that you mentioned that, because we're supposed to have Max Gladstone on an upcoming episode to talk about various cereal box stuff. So,
yes.
So very timely reference there, Mark.
Yes, Max was our head writer. So
nice. Yeah. Very good. Okay, so go and check all that stuff out, too. For us, again, if you enjoy the show, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, what do you have to say?
As mentioned last week, I'm teaching Scrivener at Superstars of Writing, February 1st through the 4th. Visit superstars.com or superstarswriting.com for information on how to register. On the 1st, I'll also be teaching and being the guest critiquer at the Pikes Peak Writers Open Critique Night. Go to pikespeakwriters.com for more information on that. And lastly, I'm teaching a half-day workshop on Scrivener at the Pikes Peak Writers Conference, Thursday, April 27th. Cost is currently $90. So go to pikespeakwriters.com and check that out. And you can pair my afternoon class with a morning class with like Kevin Hearn or Donald Moss or Kevin Eikenberry or Christine Mandeville. And you'll have basically an all-day thing. They feed you and you get to learn tons of stuff. So go check those stuff out.
Sweet.
And
look,
I started Scrivener because of Murr.
Right. Look at him, Murr. He's a big boy. Look at all of his stuff going on.
I know. Okay. He's like doing all this stuff on his own. I'm so proud.
Yes. Yeah. So go check all that stuff out that Patrick is doing too. If you're a writer, it seems like you can't pass that up, especially if you're in the area. So once again, Murr, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys. It was so much fun.
And enjoy the rest of your con, and everybody else, have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.